tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 452 of the Toonami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Crocodile.
Evening.
Seda is unable to make it this evening, but we'll no doubt hear from him next week. Before we get into the block, we'll do our regular news segment here. And I just asked Crocodile, hey, was there any news? And you did have one thing you wanted to mention.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I thought to mention was the latest trailer for the last season of Fire Force came out. Obviously, Fire Force was a Toonami mainstay for a while. We ended the first two seasons. We haven't done the third season at all yet. This trailer is for the back half of the third season, which will be the final season. All I can say is that it looks totally insane. I've not kept up with Fire Force since I left the blog. I don't know if our listeners have at all. But this trailer, a lot of it's going past me because I don't really have a lot of context for everything. It just looks absolutely batshit insane in the best way possible. And of course, those links to Soul Eater that were teased back in season two seem to be even further elaborated upon here. So if you're following Fire Force outside of the context of Toonami, be sure to check the trailer out. Hopefully Fire Force comes back to Toonami someday. We'll see. There's obviously precedents for coming back and precedents for not coming back. So I guess we'll just see on that part. But yeah, I just want to mention that trailer because it looks absolutely insane.
Did it say in the trailer, like, when it's coming out?
January. It's
okay.
Starting January. So January 2 through April for, a Storm of Core length. This should be the finale to the series and whatnot. So hopefully you can get everything that covered in the manga in a well-paced and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. I skimmed the remainder of the manga a while back, so I don't have, like, a knowledge of everything that happened, but I do know ultimately where this story goes, and I did read the final chapter, so I have some knowledge, but I'm going to skip watching it, the anime, just in case it comes to Toonami.
Yeah, that seems fair. Same reason I haven't continued on Dr. Stone or My Hero Academia. I did watch Vigilantes, which is pretty nice, but I've not watched My Hero Academia proper since it left Toonami. I've been hearing that Bones has been doing a good job with the ending episode, so that's pretty good to hear.
Yeah.
So
if
it comes back, I guess I'm going to be in for a treat.
I was really surprised to learn that too, because I think some of us have kind of petered out on it as a show overall. But yeah, I heard that the final season apparently is really going gangbusters and is really highly rated. So surprising.
Yeah, I think from what I heard from Osmosis, I think a lot of people weren't entirely happy with how the manga ended. I don't know if people say it had a bad ending, but maybe more like a mediocre ending or whatnot. But, like, it seems like the anime team might be elevating material or something. If my understanding of what's going on is correct, obviously it's not me directly reading the manga or watching anime, just osmosis and whatnot. But
yeah. Well, cool. Good for them. And if we ever do get it, then that would be something to look forward to. All right. Well, that's it for the news. So let's go on to the block rundown. And we're going to begin, of course, with Bleach. Bleach, The Thousand-Year Blood War, Core 3, Episode 1. So we're into the third core. This episode is titled A, just the letter A. So the first 10 minutes of this episode, maybe that's actually a little bit long. I'd say the first 4 or 5 minutes of the episode is basically a recap of what happened in the previous episode, because I did hear someone mention in the thread, our group watch thread, that there was a long break between the previous core and this one.
Yeah, I think it might have been 6 months at least. I can't remember exactly how long, but it was a good break.
Yeah. So I don't blame them for doing this long sort of catch everybody back up on what was happening. When we do finally catch up into real time, though, in true Bleach fashion, everything that had made it look like Yuhabaha and the Stern Ritters had lost is just completely instantly undone. We see Yuhabaha's falling, and then he opens his eyes and he says, my eyes are now opened. And it's explained to us that his shrift is the A, because I remember all of the Sterners have the shrifts of different letters. His is the A.
For Almighty, just to be clear.
Oh, okay. I was wondering that. See, he's the Almighty, and his ability is that, and this is, we had seen this briefly before, but when we saw like his eyes had multiple pupils, but yes, his ability is that he can see everything insofar as he can, I'm not going to do this justice, but he can see everything going on around him and know everything that his opponent can and would do.
It's Sharingan Hawk. It's Sharingan Hacks. Just say that. Sharingan Hacks, basically.
Okay, got it. But like pretty much undefeatable at this point.
There are a few minor loopholes, but like we'll go into later. But like it's stupid. It's just Kubo does whatever the fuck he wants, basically. Yeah.
So he's making his way back up to Ichibei, and we cut away for a moment. We see Uryu is fighting Senjumaru. Senjumaru has basically got Uryu trapped, and she kind of comes up behind him with like a needle and like pokes him. And I don't remember what that...
Yeah, I think in the back of his neck, like, that was supposed to be like a thing, a vital point to like develop, I think, either delivering finishing blow or like fuck with his sense of perception to do some kind of like weird genjutsu shit. Like, it was supposed to fuck him up, but of course, being Bleach, it was her who was fucked up instead.
Yeah. So before that happens, Yuhabaha is back up there with Ichibei, and he's kind of like, you know, feeling super confident. Ichibei kind of breaks into this sort of chant, sort of songs. He kind of sings and he does a little dance kind of thing using his black. Yeah, basically.
I mean, but there's a whole like Bankai move, like super move. And it was like, you've seen JJK, right?
No, I haven't actually.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not uncommon for a lot of Bankai to resemble domain expansions. Though, of course, I would say since JJK came after Bleach, it would be JJK that took the concept. But regardless, if some people are familiar with that show, it's kind of basically does domain expansion and transform entire area into this like sullen black and white kind of tapestry of a graveyard, and then skulls and then death kind of creeps all over, and he's absorbing the power of black from all over to deliver his finishing move. But of course, Yuhabaha is like, I have the eyes that let me do whatever I want, so you lose and I win.
Yeah, there was a kind of a neat moment here when Ichibei very confidently is going through the motions here of getting ready to cast this incredible, powerful move. And as he's speaking, Yuhabaha starts imitating him in real time, like copying exactly what he's saying.
That's the Joseph Joestar move.
Yeah. He's very much like, I know what you're going to do. I can say it. I can hear it coming. I know it's going to happen, and you can't do anything to stop me. And Yuhabaha then just straight up cuts Ichibei into pieces. Like, he just literally bloody falls apart into pieces, decapitates him, arms, legs, everything.
I think he more explodes him from the inside out, and then his like head and like extremities fly off. So it's more explosion than a cut, but it is very gory and bloody, and it's a Mortal Kombat fatality tier move.
Yeah, very, very much so. Yeah, very Mortal Kombat. And right after this happens, we cut back to the Uryu fight, and just in the same kind of way, Uryu turns the tables very quickly here and ends up killing Senjumaru. Now, I don't even remember how he did this. He just sort of throws arrows at her.
Like, basically, you know that Boruto special? Did that air on when Sasuke and Naruto had to fight that alien guy in Boruto, and then Sasuke did that, like, replacement move? Or I guess Sasuke may have done that in Naruto Shippuden proper. You know where you can, like, switch places with your target? That kind of jutsu? That move?
Yeah.
Uryu basically does that to Senjumaru, and then like Senjumaru's like, ahaha, I have you trapped in my web of tapestry, and Uryu's like, ahaha, actually it's you who's trapped, and then after that he shoots an arrow through her heart and kills her, which undoes the Bankai and frees the rest of the Stern Ritter from the dimensional prisms they were in.
Yeah. So really, in the course of just a few minutes here, the tables are completely reversed, and both Uryu, all of the other Stern Ritters, and Yuha-Baha have become victorious. And Yuha-Baha now is free to go towards the Soul King. But before that happens, we get the credits, and then when we come back, one thing I forgot to mention about the Yuha-Baha killing Ichibei is that he says that he had foreseen this. So again, his super sight, I guess he can see things kind of as before they happen. Kind of implying here that he knew all along that this was going to happen.
Yeah, Yuha-Baha mentions like kind of a cocky way to Ichibei, something of that sort. And everyone, like, I think the viewer just like, oh, Yuha-Baha just being cocky because he's a villain, of course. But like what he said basically came true. And kind of his opening of his eyes, quote unquote, where his multi peoples reappear, that's obviously a Bleach to their ass pull. But it was, to I guess Kubo's credit, teased like prior, because this song, I think it's Ugard mentions, I'm butchering his name, the Stern Ritter being the second command. He mentions this basically song to Uryu a couple episodes back about the nature of Yuha-Baha's powers.
Yeah.
And that basically like his body returns after so many years, and his mind and his heart or whatever, it goes down decreased increments of time. And like now was the time where his eyes would come back. I don't know if it was his power or his sight or whatever it's called. But like it's an ass pull, but it was technically foreshadowed like actually a while ago. So like his just like Yuha-Baha's powers were slowly coming back to him, and it just happened to be now that his power came back to him to defeat Ichibei, as opposed to like 10 minutes later, in which case it probably would have been too late. But you know, that's Bleach for you.
That's probably why he was so cocky the whole time. And also he had mentioned when they first started to battle several episodes ago that like he was like, Ichibei, you won't step more than 3 steps towards me, or something to that effect. And that's exactly what happened. Like he predicted it.
There's also, I think, a line where Yuha-Baha says something to the fact that I'm quoting, it's going to be a little difficult for me because I don't remember the exact line.
It doesn't matter. Just get the gist of it.
Yeah, the gist was like, the way it was framed in the previous episode, one would think Yuha-Baha was saying something because he thought he was about to get his ass whipped by Ichibei. Can't believe this is happening or something. He says something of that sort. But then when the line is recontextualized in this opening recap, so to speak, that Yuha-Baha is basically saying, his power is coming back. Like, I can't believe I'm about to beat your ass, is what he basically says. Whereas we first thought he was saying, I can't believe I'm about to be beaten, or I can't believe, and the line is cut. So just the way that's all framed kind of inverts the meaning of that one line. In addition to, of course, what he said about being 3 steps from Seal, that's another example of a line that's meaning was inverted between the previous episode and then the quote-unquote recap from the game's episode, where his powers come back.
So after the credits, Ichigo and his crew arrive via the device that they rode on to get up there. They walk up and they see the head of Ichibei just literally there, and all is just bloody and everything. But Ichigo can hear Ichibei's voice, and he's saying, call out my name, call out my name. And it takes Ichigo like a moment to get this. I don't know why it takes him so long, but he does.
Well, to be fair, Ichigo is like, he just saw the corpse of a former ally and said allies calling out to him. I think Ichigo would be understood to be, what the hell am I going insane or something? I think that's what Ichigo's thinking. Like, what am I hearing? What is, you know, and he figures out eventually, but I can understand that shock at least.
Yeah. Well, he calls his name, and then that just revives Ichibei. Now, this, I'm assuming this was foreshadowed when the big deal about, oh, you speak my name. So obviously his name has the power to revive him.
Yeah, like, that's. I think that's part of the reason why you're so antsy about people, especially Yuha-Baha of all people, like saying his name. So like, don't say my name so lightly. Like, to him, of course, his whole deal is names and manipulating names. Yeah. But his name itself also means something very important, and it just coming out of the mouth of someone he hates just pisses him off about nothing else.
Yeah, but in this case, having Ichigo say it revives him, basically brings it back. He says he's not enough strength. He takes some of Ichigo's strength to revive himself. Says he's really not in a position now to really fight.
Yeah, he had rays cast on him, not full rays, so he's back, but only has 1 HP.
Yeah, he just got the Phoenix down. He didn't get any other buffs. His health is still at like 2. So yeah. Then we see Yuhabaha now has reached where the Soul King is, and we see the crystal with the Soul King inside of it, and he walks straight up to it, and he's got like a spear or a sword or something, and he just stabs it right through there as he talks to it, and he says, you know, something to the effect of, "I finally got you, father." And that's when the episode ends. I have no idea what, I mean, I can obviously guess what this means, and I'm sure we'll find out, but like literal father or just metaphorical father, I'm not sure, but I'm sure we'll find out.
Yeah, there's no need to speculate. You'll find out soon. It's kind of, I would say the explanation doesn't entirely make sense, but it makes maybe half of a sort of sense. But again, you'll just find out soon enough, so there's no point in like speculating. I could have sworn he mentioned this in an earlier episode. I thought, because I mentioned it last episode, because I could have sworn he mentioned it earlier, but now I'm trying to remember if this is the first time he mentioned the Soul King was his father, or if he did.
There was a scene where, like, we saw a flashback where it was Ichibe and Yuhabaha sitting at across a table in the past. Maybe it was said there, but I don't remember him ever being called, like, knowing that they were related or that the Soul King was his father. I think this is the first time I heard that. So
okay, I thought he had said it earlier, but maybe I'm wrong. But again, regardless, because I wasn't trying to like spoil things last episode. I legitimately thought he already mentioned it before, but I could have just been wrong. So my apologies if this was indeed the first time or not. But
well, for what it's worth, I didn't even include that in the episode. I thought that might be a spoiler, so I just cut that part out. So
fair enough.
All right. That's it for this episode. Any thoughts or anything you want to share that you think is worth noting?
The only two things I'd mention is that the whole walking up the stairs that he was made from taking the reishi from around the royal palace with the dramatic music is a pretty cool effect. I think it was a good bit of animation, and also I think some CG was mixed in there, but it's pretty cool looking. I'll also say for the recap at the beginning of the episode, it wasn't like those condensed one piece recaps you normally see. It like played out the last seven or so minutes of the previous episode, but the music choices were actually different for the battles and everything. They changed the music. Mm. So like they reused the animation, but they changed the music, which I thought they used better music this time, which I thought was a pretty cool effect.
Now, I don't know if it was in the new opening for this season or if it was in the beginning of the episode, but I swore I saw the new captain of the Sarate with his like, you know, flowery sort of garb and hat and everything. I swore I saw him walking up to somebody who might be Aizen.
Oh, that was at the end of this episode. I think he was walking up to, oh, because there's a good chair-sama, as the fandom likes to call Aizen this point. There's a good chair-sama scene coming up soon. So I think, yes, that was at the end of the, I mean, Aizen wasn't in the opening, but I'm forgetting his name.
Well, I wasn't even sure if it was Aizen. It was just somebody who was like, he was like blindfolded and like chained up to a wall or something.
Yeah, it was Aizen, yes.
Okay.
We saw him back when Yuhabaha first invaded Soul Society. He tried to speak to Aizen, and Aizen was next.
I thought we could see his face last time, but maybe we couldn't. I don't remember.
Yeah, Shinsui is going to go visit Aizen to ask him a favor, and you'll see that plays in the next few episodes. But
I think that's been hinted for a while now that like Aizen is going to play a role, and this seems like the situation is now dire enough that maybe he's going to be needed. So I get
basically
it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, overall, aside from the fact that there was a lot of like recap, I mean, it was a fine episode. I certainly at this point I should see this stuff coming, but it is still surprising to me how much of a complete reversal everything happened. You know, like I was talking in the previous episode about how like Senjumaru like and Ichibe both, their powers were just so ridiculously overpowered. Like, how can they come back from this? And it's like not even a couple of minutes and they've come back, you know, everything's reversed.
Yeah. Their impossible powers are even more possible powers, such as the law of Bleach.
Yeah. Everything is easily undone.
Bullshit counts bullshit.
Yeah. ass pulling bullshit is just the nature of the show, but it keeps you on your toes. I will say it definitely keep me on my toes. I don't know what to expect. I guess I should just expect that everybody who thinks they're going to win doesn't always win.
I mean, someone eventually wins, someone eventually loses. So eventually the bullshit runs out on one side or the other, but
yeah,
it usually takes a few escalations before it gets there.
All right. Well, that's it for Bleach. Let's go on to Blue Exorcist. Blue Exorcist, Beyond the Snow Saga, Episode 4, Goodbye to You. This was a pretty interesting episode. I'll start with the rundown here. Hachiro, we get another flashback to little Shiro when she was like a kid. We see Hachiro was raising Shura, which of course we've learned about since then. But he continues to call her Totsuko, which is ends up being very important to the story. He doesn't even call her Shura, he calls her Totsuko. In fact, she didn't even have a name at this point. She was just Totsuko to Hachiro, but she doesn't have a name really. Because Totsuko is the name of her ancestor.
Right, right. I mean, he basically sees all these children as extensions of her, even though no, they are actually individual people. But he doesn't see it. How do you want to describe Hachiro? He doesn't see her that way. Because, yeah.
Exactly. And we get the scene where Shiro actually arrives to rescue Shura. He breaks out his holy hand grenade bazooka. I still chuckle every time I see these exorcists using bazookas and guns. It's just, I don't know why.
Yeah, I guess sometimes, you know, it's not that 1500s anymore. You don't need holy water. You got your holy bazooka.
Yeah, bazookas. Crazy. Anyway, it works. I mean, it drives off Hachiro for a moment. Shura sees this and she's like kind of enamored by Shiro and kind of throws herself on him and being like, I love you. Marry me, blah, blah, blah. And of course, she's just like a little kid.
Yeah, the weird thing, though, is not that she's just saying, marry me. She's actually saying, let's have kids. Like, she's a kid who, I guess, understands the concept of, like, having children. Because I'm sure Hachiro just talks about it all the time because he's a weirdo. But she doesn't obviously understand that fully because she's a little child. So just, Shiro is obviously understandably creeped out, like,
yes.
No? What are you doing?
He's like, no. No, anyway, he's kind of like, just come with me, kid, annoying brat. Oh, he wasn't even sure it was a girl at first. He's like, what, you're a girl? And anyway, he takes her back on like a train. And that's when he gives her name. He says, well, you're going to be named Shura now. Shura, whatever her last name is.
Did he say what Shura meant? I can't remember if he said something that effect.
I thought I kind of remember this, but I don't hold me to this. But I thought it had something to do with like he kept having like a nickname for her while they were battling Hachiro because he wasn't sure who she was, and I think Shura is like a shortened version of that, but I don't remember the details. It was something like that.
Okay,
I thought, but I could be wrong. We cut back to like the modern times, current time. We do learn the reason. We see that Hachiro had hypnotized Shura, and that's why she had left the hospital. He'd summoned her to him. And this is when it's explained that you were asking last episode, like, why did all these ancestors of her go along with this? Well, it seems they didn't always have a choice.
Right. Things are making a lot more sense. Like, the first ancestor always went power. She made a shitty deal for it, but that's not uncommon for humans to be making shitty deals for power in these sorts of stories. But I just couldn't figure out why the descendants were sticking around, like what was in for them. But if it's just the, he's just forcing them to have sex with other humans for his desire. Okay, it's really fucked up, but at least it makes sense what's going on here.
Yeah. So the ultimate, and we get a lot here, which I think is the most interesting part of it, which was we learned what Hachiro's motivations are. So Hachiro actually fell in love with Totsuko. It wasn't just like, I'm going to make a deal with you. It was, he actually loved Tatsuko, or still technically still continues to love Tatsuko, even though obviously Tatsuko is long dead. He loves every new version of Tatsuko that's born. This is what drives him to do this. His love for them.
And of course, he never wants to see them grow old, so
yeah,
that's why he kills them off.
Yeah, and to another question that we had last episode, which is answered here in a few minutes, is later in this episode, but very shortly, is that, like, what's the deal with Hachiro? Like, why does Hachiro impregnate? No, he's not capable of it. We learn he's a demon. It doesn't work. So
right,
that he actually has to get his Tatsuko offsprings generationally to go off, have a baby and bring that baby to him. So that's part of the whole cycle.
Yeah, that was definitely a question. Like, why isn't he doing himself? But I mean, because it's already pretty fucked up anyway. Because so I guess you know, he's basically falling in love with sequential daughters of his original love, and so obviously sleeping with them would be, or like, and that's already fucked up. I mean, sleeping with them would be also really fucked up. We're so fucked up already that can we get even more fucked up anyway? Of course, he like biologically can't, which makes sense. But then he's obviously hypnotizing other women and men. I mean, other men. Either he's somehow coercing these daughters to have, you know, bear children of these men, clearly at some point against their will, which is already kind of fucked up. And everything's fucked. It's fucked. It's
He's definitely controlling them to do it, because we see that happen here in the next
scene. So it's clearly he's done this before, like, clearly.
Right. So Rin and Yukio finally arrive, and they're ready to battle Hachiro and save Shura. And this is where we kind of see, like, the hypnosis is still working on Shura, to the point where he commands Shura to basically get on top of Yukio and to start making out right there, you know. And, you know, she can't stop herself or anything about it. She's under hypnosis there. I think he kind of knocks her out of it, or gets her, you know, breaks her from it for a moment.
Yeah, I mean, he had both Yukio and Shura under hypnosis, both of them.
So. Yeah. There's a point where, and I'm kind of skimming a little here because there's a lot that happens, but basically the gist is that there's a point where Shura basically decides to try to end everything by just chopping her whole head off. She just takes her sword and puts it to the back of her neck with the intention of decapitating herself. And, you know, Yukio and Rin are like, stop, stop. Rin runs over and stops her, you know.
Or at least severing her, like, carotid or something. I'm not sure if she was going for full decapitation, but suicide nonetheless. Like,
yeah. Right, right. And then Yukio gets up and he decides he's going to make an offer to Hachiro. And he's like, I've got an idea here. Let me lay this out, because it's pretty wild. So Yukio starts getting real dark here. And he's like, listen, I don't want her to die. But I do want power. Make a deal with me. And if you do this, I will have sex with Shura and give her a baby. And everybody's just like, huh?
Well, Shura's like, oh, Yukio must have a plan. Of course he does. Clearly has a plan. Or is she thinking, I hope this kid has a plan. Does he have a plan? He better have a fucking plan here.
Yeah, everybody's just shocked. And she's worried. And that's when we cut to commercial break. And then we come back from the commercial break. The scene continues. And it's like, it keeps getting darker.
Yeah, like, Yukio's like, oh, I'll kill her. I'll fuck her and kill. Like, yeah, it just, he'll do anything, it sounds like.
Yeah, he starts looking at Shura, and he gives her these creepy eyes where he's like, we've been friends for a long time now. I think this could really work. I think this is going to benefit everybody. And it's just like, what? Is he really serious? And, you know, and he keeps talking about, like, I got to have more power. I want more power than Rin. Rin gets really mad and charges at him. And then, like, Yukio just shoots him. Bang, bang, bang. And it kind of proves to Hachiro, is like, wow, this kid's serious. But, psych! It was all according to Keikaku. Yukio was just buying time to give Rin an opportunity to sneak up behind Hachiro and stab him. Turns out that he had only shot Rin with, like, fake bullets or whatever. And yeah, so Rin stabs Hachiro, to everyone's surprise. So this whole creepy scene with Yukio and him being very manipulative, and you know, for a moment I almost bought it, because I mean, he has been pretty emo lately. And I thought, man, is he really going to go this far?
The only reason this works at all is because we have the context, and Rin does. Sure, it's a little bit in the dark, but Rin obviously has the context of, at least we the audience have most all the context. Rin has a good portion of context, not all of it. But Yuko has been doing some like fucked up shit to, you know, in the secret. Everyone knows that's not everyone. Again, Rin at least somewhat knows that something's up with Yukio.
Yeah.
So like this seems all in accordance with that. Like we know he's going, you know, things are crawling in his skin and his wounds won't heal. We know that Rin has at least some insight what's going on from what Mephisto revealed. So like this seems actually plausible, because if you could just did this in the middle of last season or something, or a prior season, you'd be like, this seems so out of a character. What the fuck is going on? Clearly it's a fake. You would never do this in a billion years. But now you think, oh, there might be a chance he might be doing it. Ooh, I can maybe 20% believe this or 30% believe this as opposed to 0%. And I think that makes this a little more effective.
I thought he was going to do it because I thought what he wanted is he wanted the power. I think he said as much too. I think he wants the power to not die, so that he could continue to the regenerative ability, so he could continue to bring out his eye powers. That's why I thought he was going with this. And I'm like, man, I mean, the part with him like saying he was going to like for sure to have a baby with him, I thought that's pretty dark. But like, that was the part that kept me from 100% believing it. But I would say I was pretty close. I would say I was like 75% or 80% thinking, man, maybe he really means this.
Right. And of course, the context of everything going on with his life that we know about and that Rin somewhat knows about is what helps sell this at all.
Yeah. So, yeah, like I said, Rin stabs Hachiro from behind. This kind of disables him for a moment. And this is when we get the explanation about, like, you know, the bullets were fake and everything. And it's like, you know, they were actually coordinating. It was very smart. But then double psych, turns out Hachiro has not died.
Well, I wouldn't say they were coordinating. Rather, Rin was in the dark until he got shot by the fake bullets. Then Rin cut off. But Rin was like, oh, okay. I thought it was actually...
maybe coordinating is not right, but he picked up on it quickly. Like, Rin realized off screen, oh, that was not... He wasn't really trying to kill me or whatever.
Right. I did like the part where Rin starts, like, punching Yuki. I was like, oh, you were just joking around, huh? It's so funny. But Yuki was like, Rin gets it, but was also really upset, so he just keeps punching Yukio in the stomach. So I thought it was kind of funny. And then they do the reveal, of course, that Rin didn't double tap, so Hachiro's back.
Yeah, Hachiro's still alive. He's really upset, and he grabs Shura and takes off. And for some reason, and this just almost coincidentally, right after Hachiro leaves, up comes running Shima, and he's like, I'm here, and I heard that there might be some problems or something.
Yeah, I think they called for backup last episode, right? That was my recollection.
I don't remember that. Maybe. I mean, that would explain it, but he said something about, like, oh, the other backups can't get here in time or something, and I'm here. I just wasn't expecting this guy to show up. I don't know what to think of him.
It's random that's him of all people, but I do remember they called for backup, but I guess I guess this makes more sense him than Bon or Izumo or Shiemi, I guess, just popping up here all of a sudden.
So they talk for a moment, and then we cut back to the final scene of the episode, which is Hachiro, and he's carrying Shura, and he says he just wants to die. He says, I just can't die. I'm, you know, what's the word I keep trying to say? It's not invincible. It's
immortal.
He's immortal. And he's just like, I can't die. I just want to die. And you can see on his face, like he has like tears coming out of his eyes that are like freezing.
They're frozen. Yeah. Because it's like they're in the middle of a snowy mountain. So he keeps crying. At this point, it should be probably mentioned that he's transformed into this giant Hydra form. So he's like mountain sized or almost mountain sized. So, but
anyway, he's flying. Yeah. In serpent form. And he's got Shura, and he's just crying. And then Shura actually in this moment kind of feels sorry for Hachiro. And she says, well, why don't you do this? If you go and bury yourself at the bottom of the lake, I promise I'll go with you. I promise I won't resist. And so that's what they do. And she kind of like sacrifices herself in this moment. And then we just sort of see them going down into the depths of the lake with, you know, potentially her dying. Obviously, I don't think she's going to die, but that's where the episode leaves off.
We see the preview, so like, and I think we didn't expect her to die here anyway. I will say, I thought, I or at least expected Rin or someone to do a last minute save at the end of this episode, but they didn't. But I guess it's just going to be at the beginning of the next episode.
Yeah. I thought that ending scene was actually kind of nice, because while I'm not trying to say here that I think Hachiro's character has gotten any kind of like redemption or anything here, but I'm happy to see that there's more to it than just I'm bad guy. Like he's like, his heart is broken. And then that's kind of like what's causing him to do this, both that and the fact that he's just is like, you know, he's got that like, you know, it must suck to be immortal kind of situation going on.
Yeah, all these are pretty common themes in a lot of mythological stories, so I'm not surprised to see them here.
Yeah, so I like that. I like that scene a lot. And then, yeah, that was the end of the episode. The other comment I have about this episode before you chime in is that I would say that I was very surprised how fast this is being resolved. However, someone in the thread said that they think that this core is like two arcs in one core, and if that's the case, then that explains that.
I was also going to mention that we seem to be zooming through things as well, but it makes more sense if this is not going to, like, we just came up with a sad lady story of Izumo. I don't know if you need another sad lady story right back to back to back or whatnot. So, I mean, sure, story backstory is interesting, but I'm also glad that we're not taking an entire core for it. You know, if that makes sense.
I guess. I mean, I wouldn't have minded it, but I'm just surprised. I'm just like, wow, feels like this is almost over. And I mean, next episode will be episode 5, so maybe that'll be the end of this arc, and then we'll have some other thing happen. So I don't know. Or maybe not. Maybe this is just like another psych and things are going to go back to the way they were. I have no idea. It's just surprising. Things are moving fast.
You can't have 20 psychs in a row. You got to space them out.
But no, overall, I like this episode. Again, I can tell you like this arc just because I like learning about Shura's backstory and where she came from. And I don't know, this is pretty good. And I like that Yukio didn't go full emo, you know, dread.
Oh, you need to do the full Virgil.
Yeah, he didn't go there. It was all just an act. I mean, he still has his issues. Obviously, those haven't been solved, but I think the fact that he was able to sidestep that here and be the good guy and do what was right is nice. Anything about this episode you want to mention?
I'm hoping maybe, because at least this episode did serve to solve a lot of mysteries that, like, a lot of questions, or at least maybe a lot of questions I had, like, from before. Definitely appreciate it in that sense. And obviously, it is interesting getting to learn more about the story of Shura, of her, how she was raised, of this demon and whatnot. Obviously, he's, like, a sociopath, but that's not uncommon for demons and whatnot. But it was still, like, even in a sociopathy, there is a multifaceted character there. So he's fucked up, but there is more. He's not, like, muscles twirling. He's kind of sad, but fucked up, but sad, but, you know, and fucked up, but, you know, there's a little meat to the bones of the snake, so to speak.
I agree. That was the most, like, surprising part of the episode for me. And the part I appreciated the most was the whole, like, the fact that the villain isn't just completely one-dimensional. He does have more going on. I don't expect more than what we've seen here, but even this is good versus just like, I'm a generic snake demon, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah, I expect next episode is probably the finale of this arc. I would be surprised if Hachiro survives, but, you know, who knows?
Or he just goes, like, dormant, like, into the bottom of the lake, dormant or something.
Maybe. I guess there's also a question that Shura's contract with Hachiro has now been broken, so she doesn't have the demon sword powers anymore. Is she, like, just not going to be exorcist anymore? That's probably a question that needs to be resolved, too. Like, does she find new powers? Does she get them back, but Hachiro doesn't bound her to the dying at 30 thing anymore? Like, there's more questions to be answered still, so I'm curious how that resolves itself.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too much into it now because I'm sure we're about to learn this in the next episode, but I just want to throw this out there that, like, the deal that Yuki was making with Hachiro was that he was going to take away her power, like her attack power, but she was still going to keep her 30-year limit. And it's like, and we saw him, like, remove, like, the symbol from her boobs, and then, like...
Yeah, like, how they, like, burst out of her kimono, growing like five sizes. Now, some could say maybe the anime was having fun. Maybe it was a really tight kimono, like, you know, whatever. But
yeah,
that did not go unnoticed by anyone in the threads.
No, it's impossible to not notice those big accidents happening. But he also started to draw it a little bit on Yukio. But the question I have is, okay, did he completely undo the age thing, or is the age thing still there? It's not clear. I have a feeling we're just going to learn that next episode. So
it would be kind of fucked if Shura lost her sword powers but kept her age limit. That's like the worst of all worlds.
I agree. I feel like the likely scenario here is that either A, that was taken away from her too, so she's not going to die at 30, or B, they're going to compromise at the end of the next episode and like Hachiro will give her back her lifespan.
Or something. Yeah. I guess, and also this might be answered in the next episode, but there's just one thing I'm still befuddled about. Could Hachiro just not give Tasuko like immortality or extend her lifespan? That just seems so much more straightforward than this doing this whole, you know, rebirthing thing for X generations. Just make her immortal, or just make her live to 200, but beautiful. That demons do that all the time. You can't do that. Like, what's the deal?
I guess we haven't seen that in this show, and maybe that's it. Maybe the answer is simply these demons can't do that. I agree that seems the more logical solution, but I get the impression that he can't do that.
Because I remember there was that demon that Toto ate, that Phoenix demon, that when he ate it, he became younger. So it's clearly
But that's a specific Phoenix, though.
Right. It's a different demon. So like, just because one demon can do it doesn't mean all demons can do it, or this demon can do it.
I mean, and it's just especially the Phoenix. Like, that's literally what a Phoenix does. They're reborn. I mean, the snake guy doesn't really have that gimmick, is what I'm thinking.
Right. But I just feel... I hope maybe I'm being nitpicky and maybe it's not something they need to address at all. And obviously just because a Phoenix can do it doesn't mean a snake god can do it too. But that was clearly the easiest way to go about this. And
well, there was another creepy answer to this. And I thought about this during the episode, is that it's a little creepy, but I would say that maybe in a weird way, Hachiro wants a family with Tatsuko. And this is his like weird demon way of having that, where he's going to raise new generations of Tatsuko.
Maybe, but then to have a family, you don't want clones. You want
distinct. Well, he doesn't seem to care. I think he's perfectly happy with this scenario.
But also, to your family, like, you want successive generations overlapping with each other, not dying off.
That's what we want. We don't know what a demon wants. I mean, we can only speculate. He may be perfectly happy with this work. I mean, this may be the best he can do, is really, I think, the most obvious solution. Like, this is the Occam's razor answer, is that he can't make Tatsuko live forever with him. So this is his solution, is like, I'm going to just keep making her.
Maybe. Like, this could all be explained next episode. Maybe I'm being nitpicky, but it just seems like there should be an easier path here for everyone involved. But regardless,
I would say this is the more interesting path.
The more creepy path.
Well, of course. But again, we're talking demons, so creepy is par for the course. All right.
Very fair.
Let's move on to Mashal. Mashal, Season 2, Episode 4, Mash Burn Dead, and the Brawny Balloon.
Is it Burn Dead or Burn Dread?
It's Burn Dead. I looked this up like 3 times to make sure, because I thought it was Dread, but it's not.
Okay, fair enough.
Burn Dead. That's why I keep having a hard time saying it, because I keep saying it wrong in my head.
It feels like it'd be cooler if it was Burn Dread, but that's just me.
Maybe Yukio would have liked that name. All right. So at the very beginning of this episode, they're getting ready to do this new challenge. The one we talked about last week about the Minotaurs and the balloon and the key and everything. The very first thing that the announcer says, though, is that there's no cheating allowed. Now, I mentioned this right out of the gate because, as far as I can tell, I don't even know what the hell constitutes cheating. And we see someone straight up get attacked during this, and I don't understand why that doesn't constitute cheating. What does cheating mean in this world? I don't know. It's freaking weird.
I'm not sure about that either, to be honest. But
yeah. I mean, like, for them to accomplish the task required so many weird options that I don't even know how they would constitute what cheating means. Maybe we'll learn later.
Like, you could imagine a world where no cheating meant no teaming up, but they obviously teamed up easily all the time.
Yeah. There was nothing in the episode to indicate what could cheating mean, and all the things they did seemed to be like they could be cheating, but they weren't. So I don't know. Anyway, they all get teleported to this dark forest, and we see these, what we thought were minotaurs. They actually call these things Detervants. And they're not actually living creatures. They're sort of like magical constructs. And part of that means that they are immune to magic. So you can't like just shoot a spell at them and hurt them. That doesn't hurt them. Also, I guess it's a condition of this test is that if you get hit or attacked by the Detervants, you don't actually die. You just sort of feel a lot of pain and get sent back to the arena.
I think you're struck specifically with their axe, so you have to get hit. But yeah, you don't die, you just get whisked away back to the original arena.
Yeah, so there's not any real, like, there's no, like, real serious death involved here. It's just, like, it just hurts, so you don't want it to happen. You don't want to, like, fail the test. So Mash is running around trying to figure out what to do. And the Detervants, you know, he tries punching them and stuff. And then, of course, that doesn't really do much to them. I mean, actually, it does, but...
Well, it does, but they instantly recover, basically.
Right. Yeah. They actually take, it hurts them a lot. And everyone's shocked when they see this because how did he do that? And then, but it doesn't matter because the Detervants aren't even really alive. They're just sort of like, you know, forces of nature. So he's running away and he's like, I got to run. And he runs away. And then suddenly he gets shrunken. And it turns out that Max Land is nearby, and he had shrunken Max in order to save him. Now, I completely forgot who this character was, and I had to look it up.
Yeah, everyone remembers Max Land. He's the Maxiest.
So he apparently showed up earlier?
He has a very generic design, so I'm sure he was in a screenshot here or there, but he wasn't really a character that, like, talked or did anything beforehand. That's my recollection, at least.
Okay. Well, anyway, he has shrinking and growing power. That's his magic. And he says, hey, well, let's team up. He's like, let's work together. And of course, like, you know, Mash being Mash, he's like, okay, cool. Let's do it. And so they sneak around a lot and they kind of use they don't just always stay shrunken. They like resize themselves to normal size, but then they're like sneaking around on tiptoes, getting around. They find the balloon thing, which is like a big balloon, and it has like this container thing under it, holding it in place or something. And they try, like they have to get the key out of the balloon. And it's like if they touch the bottom of it or they touch the balloon, it sends out this loud like noise that causes the Detervants to show up. And they're like, how do we do this without touching it? And so the solution that Mash comes up with, well, first is that Max Land makes the balloon and the little pipe thing under
size.
It. Yeah, he grows it super large. And then Mash comes in and he does something I did not expect. He breakdances. And it's not just like it looks like breakdancing. Everyone says it. They're like, he's breakdancing. And he breakdances directly under the balloon and does some twirls and stuff. And it's enough to create like a force that forces air up into the balloon and then it pops.
Like a cyclone, like an extraordinary amount of air pressure into that balloon.
Yeah, pretty goofy. So, hey, they got the key. And then Mash is like, here, you take it. This was your idea. You know, that kind of thing. And then but Max, in a very cool way, is like, you know what? No, you have the key, Mash. I forget why he said that, but he was like, he was just cool about it.
I think the twist here is that in most shows, Max Land would be like some duplicitous spy or even just a trick master or a traitor or just an asshole using Mash for his own purposes. In this context, Max Land is actually Max Nice and just wants to help Mash because he's I think Mash is a junior and he's a senior, or like Mash is his underclassman or whatnot. And Max Land heard about Mash from, I think, Reigns and said, oh, I just want to be nice to this guy because he's, I heard he was a cool guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really nice. And so Mash is like, oh, thanks. And then he takes off. But shortly after Mash leaves, we see this new character, Carpaccio Liu Yang. He comes walking up to Max and he attacks him. And that's when we get the commercial break. When we come back, we see some Dot and Finn antics where Dot is trying to get his key, or he ends up getting his key, but it like ends up like he gets in like a lot of pain and he's got like blood shooting out of his head.
Not uncommon for Dot to be just losing profuse amounts of blood. Like
on the that's true. He comes across Finn, who's basically been hiding this whole time. And he's like, come on, Finn, I'll help you get your key. And Finn is like, yeah, you're bleeding everywhere. So basically, and then we kind of, there's like a little bit of a time skip kind of thing. And then basically.
Well, I would say a montage rather than a time skip.
Yeah,
montage. Just because you see Lance get his key and then a few other nobody jobbers get their keys. And then.
Yeah, a few more people get their keys. They all get transported back. We even see that guy from the previous episode with the musical notes, he got his key. Everybody got their key. Almost everybody got their keys.
You mean Marquette Macron, right?
Yeah. And then we see the door kind of open for the last couple of people to walk in. And first it's Max. He comes walking in, Max Land, and then Max Land lands on his face because he's all been...
Nice. I'm glad you did that because I was about to do that if you didn't do it. So.
We got to get those puns in. He lands on his face and he is out and bleeding, and behind him comes walking in Carpaccio. That's when he gets his name dropped. And Carpaccio Liu Yang, he's from Orca Dorm, and he's, you know, super powerful. And he thinks everyone is a weakling. He's just kind of muttering. He's like, everyone's a freaking weakling to me. Everyone is worthless. They're weaklings.
Orca Dorm seems to be like a piece of work. I think that's where all the douchebags live or something.
Yeah, they're the Slytherin, I think, of this reality. He has like water magic, I think. Anyway, he tries to shoot water at Mash.
Oh, no, actually, he summons his maid or waitress or whatever to bring him a glass of water so he can throw it at Mash, all like soap opera style. Then Mash intercepts his protein shake and uses it to
he just
make a shake and then like drinks it up.
Yeah, he just like quickly grabs it and just turns it into a protein shake. And then they have like a little talk here briefly where they're like, so you think, and the Mash is like, so you think everybody's weakling? Well, let me tell you something. I've never met anyone stronger than me. And this gets this Carpaccio guy really mad. He's like, just angry. Doesn't like to think anyone could be stronger than him, but of course, it's Mash, man.
Learn. They all learn.
We then learn about the next exam. So the next exam is going to be a team battle. We see these three symbols appear up in the air, and then everyone gets split off into teams of three with a different color. And the team battle is basically everyone's going to get a little crystal that they have to hold in their hands, and the goal is to break all of the other team's crystals. It's that simple.
While keeping yours intact, of course.
Yeah. Unfortunately, both Mash and Dot immediately break their crystals. Immediately.
Hey, man, those crystals are slippery.
I guess. They're just like, whoops. So, of course, this leaves Finn, who's the only other person on their three-man team, with the crystal. So now it's going to be up to Mash and Dot to protect Finn and his crystal in the next episode. And that's it for this episode. Any thoughts, anything you want to take away from this? I think we kind of covered everything.
Yeah, I think we got our puns in. We made sure to highlight all the key jokes. It's setting up obviously a confrontation between Mash and Carpaccio. And the next exam is starting off to in a hilarious fashion. Finn being separated from the group with the only crystal left, and just kind of have to fend for himself at least for a little bit.
Oh yeah, there was one more thing. It's also, of course, because of everyone's in teams of three, that meant that Finn's brother actually is on another team.
No, Reigns is not there. Lance is another
team. Oh, I'm sorry. I got it mixed up. Lance. Yeah. Lance is on a different team. So that's a little like, and I think it was Finn who was like, oh no, how's this going to work out?
Yeah, these teams were constructed for max hilarity with Mash, Dot, and Finn all on the same team. I remember there was one more joke with the announcer trying to explain the rules of the game, which was pretty straightforward, but Mash's simple brain couldn't handle it. Yes. Dot's like, explain it easier, dumb it down for him. And then the narrator just, not the narrator, the announcer basically just repeats what she said because there wasn't really a way to dumb it down. And they're like, ah, okay, now I get it. It's so clear now. And it's like, oh, okay, sure.
Yeah.
Whatever. Whatever works for you guys.
He's like, Mash, break the other crystals. And then he's like, he's sort of leaning back dead-eyed with like almost like a robotic voice. He's like, okay, Mash, break crystals. Mash, break crystals.
Oh, Mash, smash. Oh, there we go.
Mash, smash crystals. Yes. Also, it's worth mentioning, too, I just realized there were originally 12 contestants, but we must have lost three because now we are left with three teams of three.
Yeah, I mean, the first one we saw gotten in by Dead or Vant or whatever immediately, and then the rest other two are just no-name jobbers who we don't care about, so whatever.
Exactly. All right. Another funny episode of Mashle. Not as good as the last episode, I think, but this one was pretty good. I will tell you this Carpaccio character does nothing for me right now. Like, he seems like a complete nothing burger to me.
Yeah. Macron or Macret or Macron or
I double check how you say his name. Yeah.
But that guy is the, I would say is the most entertaining antagonist of this season. So definitely has not seen the last of him.
Yeah. This guy is like, his just whole thing is just like, he's strong and he hates weaklings. Like, I just don't see anything about him that's both interesting or any reason that I expect him to last.
His fight with Mash is actually pretty entertaining. Like, you'll see how it plays out, but it is actually, he actually has a very peculiar kind of magic, but the way Mash overcomes it in his own Mashle way is pretty funny in its own right as well. So, but save that for another episode.
All right. Let's move on to the final show on the block, One Piece. One Piece, episode 754. A battle begins. Luffy versus the Mink Tribe. Or some of them. All right. This episode starts out. Luffy is by himself. He's looking around, and he cannot find where everyone else has gone. He's yelling out everybody's name. He even says, oh, yeah, gas guy. Ah, I don't care about you. And then he suddenly jumped. Two big dark figures attack him. We cut back to the other group, Frankie and everybody. So the dog girl, who we learn later is named Wanda, is like, hey, Carrot, jump up in the air and tell us what's going on over nearby in the nearby forest. And so Carrot like does like a super high jump. She's like gets way up high and then looks and sees there's like an explosion going on. I think that's the fight with Luffy.
Yeah, Carrot jumps real good.
Yeah.
Those jumpers back at Summer Jack would have been in awe.
Yeah, I'm probably underselling it here. I mean, like, it's an insane jump. She jumps like 200 feet or something. It's ridiculous. She comes back down and she's like, get on. And she kind of gets Carrot to get onto the back of the crocodile thing. I think at this point we learn her name is Wanda, and she's, or we get like an Oda card or something. And they're like, wait, before you go, tell us where our friends are. And she's like, well, you need to go over here and you'll find your friend's corpse. And they're like, huh? And then they take off. And then Robin is like, well, what does this mean? Does it mean the minks are cannibals? And there's like a running joke here where Robin just, of course, does Robin things where she just keeps saying like, they must be cannibals. They probably ate our crewmates.
Would they even be cannibals if they ate the Straw Hats? Would that, is that cannibalism because they're different species?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Human beings, chimpanzees, that's like a thing. Like, it's obviously in some parts of the world. I don't think that would be considered cannibalism, though, if humans ate chimpanzees or vice versa. Wouldn't that be probably a closer relationship even than a dog person and a human? Or
The running gag here, of course, is that Usopp is freaking out, and she just keeps mentioning casually. It's like, they could just be cannibals, you know. And he's like, stop mentioning that.
I mean, I think the thing that I like that flared up to my brain was, first of all, she had friends' corpse, not corpses, corpse. And so, right. A, where are the other straw hats? But also, B, there's a straw hat who is a skeleton, and a skeleton isn't a corpse per se, but, you know, given Japanese English translations and stuff of that nature, is she just meaning Brooke was just laying on the ground and she thought that was a corpse? And then, like, why does Usopp not remember that they have a dead man amongst their crew? That probably should be a good thing to remember. Those are just thoughts going in my head. I'm sure we'll explain it in future episodes. I'm just explaining my thought process. But.
Oh, yeah. Go right ahead. Law explains that he has a Viver card he's been using to try to find his crew because he's looking for his crew. And he mentions, hey, you remember my my first mate, or he's my navigator? His name is Beppo. And it's like, I think it's Usopp. It's like, oh, yeah, you've got that panda guy who's on your crew. And he's like, yeah, well, Beppo is a native of this place. He's a native of Zo. He's a mink. And, you know, but he hasn't been to Zo for a long, long time.
I think since he was a child, so he didn't remember
yeah.
much.
So he doesn't really know the place very well, but obviously he was born there. And yeah, I thought that was kind of neat too, because that was like, I think Beppo was introduced back in Saba Odi.
I thought it was Marine Ford, wasn't it? Or was it earlier than that?
I thought he showed up briefly in Saba Odi as well. When all of the supernovas were first introduced, I thought he was there.
So is Law's crew, is Law the only member of his crew who's like worth a damn? Because it feels like everyone else in his crew is, like, I mean, obviously being a navigator is obviously an important role. But whereas like the Straw Hat's crew is like Luffy and then a bunch of killers, it feels like, I mean, even I guess Nami's maybe not a killer, but she's still pretty strong in her own right, like for a human who doesn't have devil fruit powers. I always felt like Law's crew was just him and then like a bunch of kind of well-meaning jobbers.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I mean, they're just like goofy. I mean, is the way I would describe them. They are not super strong. No. I mean, like fighters? No, they're not fighters. They're along for the ride, but they're very loyal to Law. And they do get introduced here in a minute later in the episode when they meet up with them.
Or reintroduced.
Beppo particularly he's always been very, I don't want to say, he's not cowardly. He's just very kind of like cautious. We cut back. We see that Luffy is fighting two big minks. One is like a sort of like a bull mink. And then another one's like a big, like black gorilla mink, like a giant gorilla mink. They try attacking them and they use a special technique called Electro, which gets named. And we actually saw Carrot do the same thing when she attacked Zoro.
Oh, did she do the same thing? I thought electric abilities was unique to that bull. Did they all use it?
Yeah. I mean, when Carrot was striking Zoro's blade with her, like she has like a gauntlet thing on her hand, it was sparking. It was electric. And Zoro even said, it's like, if I didn't block that, I would have got electrocuted.
I must miss that. My apologies.
But yeah, they apparently all have this ability, or at least several of them do. But of course, Electro and electric attacks don't work on Luffy. He's made of rubber, so it's not working on him at all. And then that's when Law's crew, Beppo, and the others come running up to see Luffy fighting. And that's when we get the commercial break. When we come back from commercial, Carrot and Wanda also come wandering up. And they decide to, they were like, hey, stop attacking this guy. This is Straw Hat Luffy. Don't attack him. We learn that the two minks are, one's called Roddy and one's called BB. I think Wanda throws like a bunch of bananas at one of them, the gorilla one. He gets, that distracts him. And then Carrot brings, like, pulls her cape off and has like a red cape, which ends up distracting the bull one. And then that's how they end the fight.
Very easily distracted, these gentlemen are.
So they're like, they have the tropes of the animals. But it turns out it wasn't just Roddy and BB that were attacking or that were nearby when those two were attacking Luffy. We also see there was another mink up in the trees who looks kind of like a, I forget what he is. I think he's like a
lion. He looks like a lion to me.
Well, I think he's cougar maybe because he had spots. I forget the differences, but anyway, yeah, a lion or a cougar, some kind of big cat.
I find a mane. I don't think cougars have manes, but
I don't remember what he is, but anyway, his name is Pedro, and he's very serious. He's got like a kind of like eye patch thing going on.
Yeah, Pedro Pascal is really getting around.
Yeah. But I think Wanda is like, Pedro, you can call off the other minx. And they're like, well, other minx? And he's like, fine. And he takes off. And then we see that there apparently were like 30 of them around, all hidden, that we hadn't seen.
Yeah, Luffy seems surprised by that, which seems surprising to me because Luffy feels like the type of guy who would have noticed that. I mean, obviously, Luffy can be kind of like, not dim-witted, but absent-minded or like unobservant. But when it comes to like fighting and like combatants and, you know, that kind of stuff, Luffy's pretty usually locked in those sorts of things. So I'm kind of surprised that Luffy didn't realize that.
Yeah, I think it could be a combination of he might have been distracted, but also a combination of just the nature of the minx.
Just that damn good.
They're just that damn good at hiding, yeah. Or they certainly know their environment or something. We cut back to the nearby city, which is called Karu City. It's Robin, Zoro, Law, Usopp, and Franky. They're kind of walking through the city, and they're just sort of taking in all the like clues and details of what happened. They can tell that the city was just recently attacked. I think Robin sees that there was food still warm sitting on a pot, and or not warm, but that it's like less than a week, couple weeks old, less than 2 weeks, she says. And then there's like, they see giant claw marks on the walls and giant footprints on the ground. Clearly something big had been attacking them. We cut back to Wanda and them, and Wanda explains that it was Jack that attacked the Mokomo Dukedom. So we kind of learn here two things. One, we learn Jack, who we've seen before.
Is that one of the, I'm trying to remember, because I feel like there are multiple people called Jack. Isn't Jack the, no, that's X-Drake, right? X-Drake is the guy who was the part of the Minus 12, whatever it's called, the 12th generation, or whatever it's called.
The Minus 12.
I can't remember what they're called, the Worst 12?
Yeah, the Worst Generation or the Supernovas, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I got close.
Yeah, you got close. Oh, no. X-Drake is not Jack. No, it's a different. Jack is a different character.
This might be just cultural osmosis at work here, but I feel I remember when we flash back to Nami and the crew back at Zoe, they're fighting the Beast Pirates, and the Beast Pirates, I think, are Kaido's crew, right? Because I think that maybe the episode that Kaido was introduced doesn't Kaido have his members are like King, Queen. Is there a Jack? Is a Jack from Kaido's crew then? Did Kaido attack them? Is that what happened?
Yeah. I will say you picked up on something I never picked up on. First of all, a King and Queen have not been introduced yet. That's a cultural osmosis thing.
Yeah, I only know about them because of
because of Wano. But I never picked up on the fact that it was King, Queen, Jack. I never picked that up before. That's interesting. But yes. You're on the right track. Oh, yes, the Beast Pirates obviously are a part of Kaido's people. That's when Jack was first mentioned, was with the flashback to Zoe that took place during Dressrosa. And they were being attacked by the Beast Pirates led by Jack.
Okay.
Although I don't think we saw Jack. Maybe we did. I don't think we did. Anyway. But yeah, this is just more confirmation of that. Wanda's basically explaining that, yeah, Jack had attacked. And then their kingdom is called the Mokomo Dukedom. And then I think it's Luffy and his group, mostly I think Usopp maybe, but somebody's like, well, where's Sanji's group at? The ones that got here before us. And then Wanda just sort of looks at them and doesn't answer. And she's starting to like have little sweaties on her face. And it's like, you can tell she doesn't want to say something.
Yeah, I think it's just Luffy who's talking to Wanda. I don't think Usopp's there. I think it's right. Because Wanda interrupted.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yeah, it must have been. Yeah.
Interrupt the other fight. So I think Luffy, like Wanda introduced herself to Luffy. They talked a little bit. And then Luffy's like, okay, so where's my crew? And then Wanda's like, I don't know. And then there's the BDI, like the Simpsons dog, basically.
Yeah, she doesn't say I don't know.
Oh, I think she just has a quote or something, or she just says nothing. Okay.
She just kind of says nothing. Because he specifically says, where's Sanji and my other friends? And she just doesn't answer them.
Right, and given what she said earlier in the episode to Usopp's group, she's probably, the answer she wants to give is about the singular corpse, which is obviously, I think, a red herring in the ways I mentioned before. But yeah, all right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't want to explain anything, but like, if it was just that, she wouldn't be sweating right now. So there's something going on here. That's when we get the to be continued. So that's it for this episode. Any thoughts about the wacky adventures in the land of the furries?
Doolittle, I guess. Everyone can communicate pretty freely with each other. There's not really a Doolittle situation. I guess furries.
No.
So it's like every kind of furry like animal that's this little furry in the One Piece world that's not aquatic is a mink?
That's a good question. I don't know if there's like a definitive answer to that. I will say that obviously we know Chopper is not, because he's not even
he's a normal reindeer who ate the human fruit, right? So he's just
right. He's not a mink, but there has definitely been people who've theorized, like, is Mary a mink? Because remember what Mary looked like? He kind of looked like a goat. You mean
the ram horns and whatnot?
Yeah, yeah. And it's never been explained. I always, like, in my head canon, that he might be, like, half mink or something. We haven't really seen that many minks, honestly. I don't think we have. I think maybe, like I said, Beppo might have been, like, the first true mink we ever saw. I think that's when Oda came up with the idea for them, was back in Sabaody. Actually, I remember this now. Yeah, Beppo was at Sabaody, because he was revealed along with the crews. We saw the crew members of the supernovas when they were first introduced, and Beppo was there. And that's also the same arc when we learned the word mink, because the word mink appeared on the list of the slaves that you could buy at the human market that they had there.
Mm.
So that was like the first like clue that Oda dropped that this was a thing, because he had like mermaids cost 1 million berry, and a giant cost 5 million berry, and then a mink cost this. And it was like, mink, what's that? And it was never explained until now.
All right. I got you.
All right. So that's it. Yeah. I keep forgetting. You're right. We are kind of, the groups are kind of separated right now. It's Robin, Zoro, Law, Usopp and Frankie are over in the city, and then it's Luffy. And is it just Luffy?
Yeah, Luffy went off by itself, and I think Zoro and Law went off in their own thing, right?
Zoro's in the city.
I think they're about to leave, but then the minks attack, so they are still with Usopp's group. I think is what happened.
Yeah, I don't remember if Zoro, Robin, Law, Usopp, and Frankie met up with Luffy at the end of the episode. I thought they did, but maybe they haven't met up.
I don't think so. I think Luffy's still on his own with Wanda, okay. Carrot, and I guess BB and the bull, whose name I'm forgetting.
Roddy or whatever.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it for One Piece. I don't think I miss anything. Those are the big takeaways.
Yeah, I think we covered everything.
Cool. Anything this week you think is worthy of a nomination?
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
I mean, nothing's jumping out to me. Like, there are moments I think that were nice in these episodes, but nothing where I was like, oh, that's amazing.
Maybe Yukio's plan? I don't know. Just because you could maybe slightly buy it, but, you know. It's because, I don't know, maybe, I don't know, maybe not, I don't know.
I don't know, I don't think it's a contender. I liked that, but I think that's a very fleeting thing, and it was nice writing, but I don't know if it was like a nominatable moment of the year type thing, so.
Sure, all right, then, yeah, I don't really, and Bleach is just like Bleach bullshit, you know, 20 minutes straight, so.
Yeah. So, like, as someone who's seen tons of Bleach, when you see the things that happened in this episode, are you just sort of like, yeah, that's what happens?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Or is this, like, over the top?
I mean, I would say, like, Ichibei's and Senjumaru's Bankais are probably some of the most impressive displays of ours in the series so far. But it's been, you know... Someone does something impressive. Someone's like, I have your counter for that. And someone's like, I have your counter. And then he keeps doing that till someone like runs out of counters, and then that person loses. So, yeah. Obviously, what Ichibei and Sanjumaru were doing was pretty ridiculous. And obviously, Yubawa was just like his basically Golden Experience Requiem. just like, no, I disagree, and then it just doesn't happen, basically.
But like, so his power, I mean, I don't want you to spoil it for me, but like, his power is about like observation.
It's basically like the Sharingan, where it started about the abilities for advanced perception, and then just keeps power creeping as the arc goes on. And there are like some loopholes and some flaws. Like, there are some things he actually doesn't foresee, and he explains why. But for the most part, it's just think of the Sharingan, where it starts with like advanced perception, and then just kind of power creeps from there until like whatever the author wants to do.
Yeah, I mean, I am enjoying Bleach, but I also kind of chuckle a little bit.
You have to.
About like, because I'm just like, my gosh, the reversals happen so fast, and they just keep happening. It's just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, you have to. This is not like Hunter x Hunter, where they explain how people reverse each other in detail, and it's like, oh, okay, that makes complete sense when you explain it that way. And of course, Hunter x Hunter, like every shonen, has a few assholes, but for the most part, when someone wins or loses a fight, it's like, okay, this makes sense. You spend a paragraph explaining to me, and now that I've understood it, that makes sense. Rather than in Bleach, they can spend a paragraph or two explaining it to you, and you're just like, sure, whatever, if you say so. Whatever, I don't care. Like,
I do like the power creep a little bit in this show, though. I think it's kind of fun. And the other thing I want to mention briefly before we close out the episode is that I think I'm kind of excited to get back to our core Bleach characters being a part of the story again, because we've been away from them for a while now. We see cutaways where they're talking, but like, I'd like to see them. I'm looking forward to them being more involved. Like Ichigo and everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we'll see how involved they end up being, but you know, it's Bleach.
You don't give me a lot of hope.
It's Bleach. Bleach is going to Bleach.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I would think that they're going to end up doing damage, even though it doesn't make sense. That's what I'm thinking.
There are some cool moments that the anime added that were not in the manga. So, like, there actually are some cool Ichigo and Uryu moments and whatnot. And so, yeah, there are actually some cool moments coming up that were not in the manga that I think you'll really appreciate, given what you just said. But it's also Bleach, so keep that in mind in the other respect as well.
Okay, I still don't know what that means, but I thought it meant that everything's going to get tables turned, but I'm just... There's no way this story ends without Ichigo being the victor, right? That can't happen. But
like that, the final core hasn't aired yet, and we know it's going to deviate a lot from the manga, so it's hard for me to really discuss what hasn't aired yet.
Okay, I'm not expecting him to win. I'm just saying, like right now, what I'm saying is though that he's going to be in battles, and our other people who are down in the Sarite on the ground, I think are going to now be back into battles again. I think. Well, no, I guess not, because this is why I'm confused. I'm sorry. I just realized. I thought last episode everybody was going to fall back down to Earth, or not Earth, but you know, back down. But they haven't left, have they? They're still up there.
Oh no! Fall back down. The Royal Guard Stern Ritters didn't fall back down. Yu Baohao kind of teleport himself from free fall, so he's back up there. Ichigo's crew arrived up there. I will say
they're up there. Yeah.
If you want to get a good understanding of who is going to do what in the next core, just look at the opening. The opening, I think, lays it all out there for the most part.
Okay.
Is that character in the opening doing something cool? They're probably going to do something cool this season. Are you not there? Probably not going to do much.
Yeah. All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Toonami Skate podcast. Thank you for being here, Crocodile.
My pleasure.
And I think again, this next weekend, we're going to have more of the same lineup. So tune in next week for episode 453. And until then, later.